I'm Andy Rogers, Steve Fell, the cherry for Whitney Media, WVOX, WVIP.
The latest forecast from the 1460 WVOX Weather Center, brought to you by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
At Entergy, meeting our region's need for reliable, affordable, and clean electricity is an everyday success story. That's because our Indian Point Energy Center supplies up to 38% of the region's power needs. It also produces some of the least expensive power generated in the region. And most importantly, it does not produce greenhouse gas emissions. That's right, zero greenhouse gases. This plays a key role in helping this area improve its air quality. So it should come as no surprise that a growing number of environmentalists, including Dr. Patrick Moore, the co-founder of Greenpeace, say nuclear power is a vital tool in the fight against global warming. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.safesecurevital.com. Because the more you know, the more you realize that Indian Point's clean, reliable, and affordable energy is a big part of the climate change solution.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of Premium Cadillac, Bethel Synagogue, Arnold Forster, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
The voice of Westchester, 1460 WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lebensold, your host for the series on the natural world, education, and culture. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, February 26th, 2009, the 68th. Day of winter. Can spring be far behind? Not really. We have gained 2 minutes of daylight since yesterday, 36 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. Days will continue to lengthen until the first day of summer, June 21st, Father's Day. The sun rose at 6:34 this morning. It will set at 5:43 this afternoon. We will have 11 hours and 9 minutes of daylight today. The moon rose at 7 o'clock sharp this morning. It will set at 7:40 to this evening. We reached new phase yesterday, and the next full moon will occur on March 11th, just 9 days before the vernal equinox and the first day of spring. That's right, just 9 days before the vernal equinox. That's the next full moon. On March 8th, just 1 week from this Sunday and before we meet again, we will return to daylight savings time. And except for those of you who get up and out early in the morning, it will seem as if the days got a lot longer, a lot quicker. In fact, March 8th will be just 3 minutes longer than the 7th and 4 minutes shorter than the 9th, but that is where the threshold is. We reach thresholds and we step over them into another world. Also, we will meet just once again before the vernal equinox, the first day of spring. It occurs on March 20th this year. Next high tides in New Rochelle in about 20 minutes at 11:29, in Yonkers, 10:07 tonight. Dobbs Ferry, 10:35 tonight, and in Tarrytown at 10:51. Now our regular feature, the names of American service members who have lost their lives in Iraq. May they live on in all of our hearts. Most recent report of American deaths in Iraq, 4,249, 651 more in Afghanistan. That is exactly 4,900 in both countries. The best estimate of wounded in action in both countries is 33,750, and that is just American casualties. There are, of course, other coalition casualties and many Iraqis and Afghanis. Casualties: 3 American soldiers were killed when insurgents attacked their unit using small arms fire in Balad, Iraq, on February 23rd. Today's the 26th. That was 3 days ago. Specialist Michael B. Alleman, age 31, from Logan, Utah, of the 25th Infantry. Corporal Michael L. Main, age 21, Burlington Flats, New York, also in the 25th Infantry. And PFC Zachary R. Nordmeyer, age 21, of Indianapolis, Indiana, also of the 25th Infantry. These 3 men were alive 3 days ago. Also, Staff Sergeant Mark C. Baum, age 32, of Telford, Pennsylvania. He was actually an Army National Guard member. He was serving with the 111th Infantry. He died of wounds suffered when enemy forces attacked his unit. Small arms fire in Mushahada, Iraq. That was on the 21st, 5 days ago. Private First Class Quislin K. Walter, age 19, Hawaii Army National Guard. Injury sustained from a non-combat-related incident in Kuwait on the 19th. Staff Sergeant Sean D. Diamond, age 41, Dublin, California. He was with the 14th Engineer Battalion. A roadside bomb exploded near his vehicle in As-Salam, Iraq, on the 15th of February. Corporal Stephen S. Thompson, age 23, Tulsa, Oklahoma, 4th Infantry, died of injuries sustained from a gunshot wound in Baghdad on Valentine's Day. Now here's a curious one. This is an Englishman, actually, not an American. Private Ryan Rathall, age 21, from Surrey, England. And the reason I mention him is he died of a non-hostile gunshot wound, and I don't know what that means. Was he cleaning his weapon? What's a non-hostile gunshot wound? It doesn't say. Anyway, he is a coalition soldier who died. All of these seven American servicemen and one Englishman were alive on the date of our last broadcast 2 weeks ago. May they live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the very near future, because there are no more deaths to report. Okay, time for the Culture Corner, my reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions, and you have the right to differ from them, because everyone has the right to be wrong. Well, the other day I saw William Shakespeare's Twelfth Night at the Pearl Theater Company down on St. Mark's Place in Manhattan. Now, I love this company. The Pearl Repertory Company keeps classic theater alive more than any other company in New York City, and they do seem to do well. The Sunday matinee played to a full house, and on each occasion I have attended plays there, there have been few empty seats. I like the company, and therefore I won't nitpick, although, of course, we can. They avoid the challenges of elaborate set construction and scene change by not building any sets, which is one way out. It's nice to have something, at least. What they do is they just have one Spartan piece, and it supports the entire production. It works, I guess, but the actors have to be really good to make it work in that situation. It's very practical, I know, because I have had problem with set design and sets changing and scene changing myself. In Twelfth Night, all of the acting is competent, sometimes better, and sometimes even better than that, especially the scene where the overly fastidious and judgmental Malvolio, played by Dominic Cusgern, attempts to smile. That was a great scene. But one must always suspend belief to a certain extent when watching a play, any play. But the director has to do a bit more sometimes to make us believe. And in this case, when there is a device of mistaken identity where a brother and a sister are supposed to look exactly enough alike that people mistake them for each other. Now, the actors who play Viola and Sebastian don't look alike. And all they have is the same shirt and pants. Well, you really can't expect an audience to catch that. You got to give them something. You got to give makeup, cheek blush, pointy ears, something. You have to make them look alike. In theater, as in journalism, assume the audience has just happened in from out of town and has no clue about anything. So Mr. Sullivan, J.R. Sullivan, the new incoming artistic director, he does a good enough job with the rest of the play. He's replacing Shepard Sobel, founder and artistic director since the start in 1984. Big boots to fill. Mr. Sobel has done a wonderful job. We wish Mr. Sullivan luck. My guests today are Jim Connell, public affairs officer at the Bronx VA Medical Center, and Gene McLear, the commander of the American Legion Post here in New Rochelle. Most people don't know much about the Veterans Administration or its medical services or its other services. Personally, they make my life much, much easier and have for lots of years. If you know a veteran, call him or her and have them tune in or visit my website, www.environmentallysound.org, in a few days, where you'll be able to listen to it at any time. We will take your phone calls today. If you'd like to call in, we're at 914-636-0110. If you have questions of Sergeant Connell or civilian Mr. Connell or of Gene McLear, or if you wish to discuss your experiences with the Veterans Administration. Welcome, Jim Connell.
Thank you, Bob.
And welcome, Jim McLear.
Hey, thank you, Bob.
Okay. Gentlemen, just get right into the mic, if you will. Okay. Now, one thing that I don't get, and that you actually put in your question list, Jim, was how does the government define the term veteran for the purposes of getting health care and other services? Gene and I both thought that anybody who was in the service, once you're discharged, you're a veteran. Is that wrong?
Yes and no. It's not wrong so much as it is a moving target. I must have put that question in there to help you torture me, because frankly, it really is a tough thing to pin down. And the reason for that is because eligibility standards change so frequently. In fact, they change almost with every Congress. And
in America, we do not torture.
In America, we do not torture.
You heard the president the other night?
I did hear the president. In America, it was a great speech.
Okay.
But just getting back to your point, yeah. You know, if you wanted to put it as simply as you can, you'd say generally it's an individual who served a period of active duty service and was honorably discharged. That's probably the broadest definition. But like I said, the strict definition changes literally every Congress, every 2 years.
What about bad conduct discharges, general discharges?
There's where it starts getting fuzzy. here's the thing, and I tell people when I talk to new employee orientation classes, generally, you know, there's a couple of things our veterans have in common. They have at least one period of active duty service, and they have at least one period of active duty service for which they got an honorable discharge. What that means is that there could be other periods of service for which somebody didn't have an honorable discharge, but they could qualify by virtue of their honorable discharge during an earlier period of service.
So if you served one tour and you got honorable, and then you went in and you
punched somebody
and you got thrown out, mm-hmm. you still got credit for it. I imagine a DD would just eliminate all that, right? You can't get a dishonorable.
You could have a DD-214 from your first period of service and not have, you know, never show anybody your next period of service. The Healthcare Eligibility Center in Atlanta generally keeps tabs on those things, and it's not unheard of that somebody could be made eligible later to find out and be told that they're ineligible for some.
Don't you have to show your discharge papers when you sign up?
The only thing you have to do is prove you're the person you say you are, and even that, I think, has been fudged from time to time. But
you don't have to prove you're
a veteran. And the reason I say that is because since before the Vietnam War, certainly after the Vietnam War, the Department of Defense provides VA with discharge information from all discharged individuals. Enlisted in an officer. So the VA has access to that information. And through the Healthcare Eligibility Center that I mentioned before in Atlanta, they can ascertain, because quite often, you know, for instance, we do outreach extensively to homeless communities, for instance. These people don't keep good records, generally speaking. And a lot of them will say, well, yeah, I served here and there, and here's an ID card that says I am who I say I am, but I don't have my DD-214. Not surprisingly, there's a lot of people that fall into that realm. And so the Healthcare Eligibility Center gives us access to records that could verify their period of service.
Well, Gene, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think he gave you the story.
It's interesting. I thought it was a little harder to sign up. What is it now? Now, I know that things have changed. When I signed up years ago, I showed my DD-214, that's the discharge paper, and they signed me up. But then I heard later on that it's not so easy anymore. Now you have to prove something else. You can't just have been in to get medical benefits. Am I wrong about that?
Well, you know, no, you're not wrong. The thing of it is, a couple of things, and I don't know if I could maybe jump ahead to some of the questions we were going to talk about later. But
no problem.
You know, there's three significant components of VA. One is a Veterans Health Administration. That's a network of 1,400 storefront and hospital locations around the country.
Wow.
154 full-service hospitals, and the rest of those are community-based clinics. That's the Veterans Health Administration. Then there's the Veterans Benefits Administration. They administer things like compensation for service-connected disabilities, pensions for low-income veterans, the GI Bill. They administer the home loan program. Other, you know, benefits, as the name might imply, are handled by the Veterans Benefits Administration. And then there's the National Cemetery System. our national cemetery system, including every national cemetery except Arlington, which is owned by the Army, is run by the VA. Then there's networks of state and local cemeteries and Veterans Administration, so it all gets very confusing. But generally speaking, the eligibility is established early on within the Veterans Health Administration, but you can also apply for benefits to the Veterans Benefits Administration, and application to one doesn't necessarily qualify you for participation
in
the other.
Who can get health benefits at the VA?
Well, looking ahead, actually, at one of your questions, you asked about how the Bush administration versus the Obama administration might be different.
Yes.
In 2003, the Bush administration, because of budgetary constraints and the rising cost of health care, sought to curtail enrollment of what's called high-income non-service-connected veterans. Now, going back a little farther, if you, Gene may recall a period of time when only the only veterans that could be eligible for VA health care were veterans with service-connected disabilities. It means an injury that they incurred in service, or indigent veterans. Those are the only two cohorts of patient that VA served up until the Eligibility Health Care Reform Act of 95. That was signed into law in 96, and it transformed VA, frankly, and we can get into how that happened and what happened later. But the essence of this thing is that Congress in passing the Health Care Eligibility Reform Act opened VA to all veterans. So that was 95, passed in 96. So in between 96 and 2000, the VA went from about 3 million to about 6 million enrolled patients. Virtually doubled its size, and a lot of transformational things happened. A lot of things were happening in the healthcare industry at large. The healthcare industry began to understand the benefits of preventative medicine and investing in outpatient clinic treatments and things like that. And actually, insurance companies began to understand it was worth their while to pay for these services uh-huh. on the front end, as opposed to having to pay for very expensive hospitalizations.
Sure.
And so at that time, anyway, not to get too far off track yet, I'll save that for later, but what happened was VA opened its doors to all veterans. Then, we doubled our enrollments. Then around 2003, of course, as you know, the war was going on at that time. The VA budgets had been, and healthcare budgets everywhere, had been escalating by very large percentages. And the VA secretary said, you know, we have our core responsibility to the service-connected and indigent patients. Those were the patients that were being served before the eligibility reform. We just don't have enough money to spread this love around, as it were.
Let me ask you mm-hmm. something. First of all, does each VA medical center, full-service hospital, have their own standards, or is it system-wide?
Both.
If I move to Florida mm-hmm. and I go to wherever the facility is down there, can they just say, no, you're not eligible by our standards?
No, they can't simply do that. But what can happen, and you know, I have a World War II veteran father who does happen to live in Florida. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what can happen is that a healthcare system can be inundated with a mass number of patients and find it hard to keep up with staffing and budget to take care of them.
Okay.
You can't build hospitals fast enough.
If there's a special...
So they can't tell you you're not ineligible.
Can I just generally show up with my card down in Florida or Kansas or something and ask and request services?
Generally, you can.
Good.
And that's one of the...
I was worried about that because I heard something to the contrary, and I'm glad to clear that
you'd
up.
You'd be eligible, but there are a few hoops to jump, but
I don't mind
you'd
jumping
be eligible.
In this climate now, where many people are being laid off, and I presume they're losing their health care benefits. In fact, Joan Austin is in the studio, and she's on a job. And there's some tenuousness with her job and every job. And some people are working to maintain their health benefits. Are you expecting an influx of patients, of veterans who currently have health care coverage, who may need the VA?
It's a very good question, Bob. You know, I've actually debated this issue with people in the past. But, you know, when I came into VA only 7 years, 7.5 years ago, there was 172 hospitals. And now there's 154. Now, the veterans population is, despite the fact that we have two ongoing wars, the veterans population is getting smaller. Population trends we talked about a second ago with people moving south and things like that. There are a lot of trends and a lot of factors involved in that. But one of the things that is happening with the VA system, is that we serve in this area a lot of patients who are indigent, it's an older population. It tends to be a sicker population. Our healthcare costs rise. And I've debated with folks who think that, as populations decline, we can close hospitals. And my argument, there's a couple of arguments to that. And one is that, as individuals require more medical attention, certainly the staff and the equipment and the infrastructure needs to be ready.
Okay, now for many years, people have had a perception, the public has had a perception, and they may still have a perception that somehow you get inferior medical care in the VA system, that it's the equipment is not as good, the doctors are not as good, the staff is not as good. What do you say to that?
Shame on whoever's passing. I heard these same. Nobody who went in. I served in the Marine Corps, and when I got out, I had a disability. I was told go see VA, and I said sure, I will. And 20 years later, when I came to work for VA, I actually did enroll for healthcare. And we're all. Let me just say this. One of the things about having a healthcare system that travels from sea to shining sea, it's not much different than from a marketing perspective, as a Wendy's. Who somebody finds a fingernail in a bowl of chili at a Wendy's in East San Diego. It might as well have been in every bowl of chili and every Wendy's in the country. The same thing happens. We've got a hospital system that stretches from sea to sea, and if an anomaly makes news, it may as well have happened everywhere. So those kinds of things will always be subject to, but VA's changed drastically in the last 10,
so
12 years, and I can tell you a lot about that.
How would you rate the quality of care? We have about a minute and a half. How would you, before the break, how would you rate the quality? In fact, Gene, do you use VA services?
No, I do not.
You don't?
No.
And Gene is an old Navy man from the 40s, is
from
it? From the Korean War. And wow, you must have some other plan. I do use the VA system. Do you get your health care at the Kingsbridge Road?
Probably 90% of it at the Kingsbridge. I do get health care on the outside as well.
So, what was my question?
What the rumors of substandard care and all this? What I do? Do we have some time to talk?
Well, we have about a half a minute.
Okay,
but then we'll come back.
So. Okay. So when I mentioned earlier about the transformation of VA in 1995, when VA opened, or 96 when they opened the doors to all veterans, a lot of veterans who had health care elsewhere came in the doors of VA and looked around at VA. And, of course, the whole healthcare industry was going through changes.
1 minute to you.
And some of them liked what they saw, and some of them said, well, this doesn't stack up to what I'm getting in the private sector. Mm-hmm. And you might say, why would that matter to an administrator whose budget is...
Well, it might. Let me cut you off there, but
sure.
Hold on to that thought. You are listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle. If you are in Milwaukee, Oregon, or Wisconsin, Perth, Australia, or Vienna, Austria, or in Woodstock, New York, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live. This program is Environmentally Sound. I am your host, Bob Lebensold. In the studio with me is Jim Connell of the VA Medical.
This is the authentic voice of the people.
It's a community station.
AM 1460 WVOX.
expensive durable goods dropped by more than
5%. Fox News Radio, I'm Jane Metzler.
This budget is an honest accounting of where we are and where we intend to go.
President Obama unveiling his first budget cost nearly $4 trillion.
While we must add to our deficits in the short term to provide immediate relief to families and get our economy moving, it is only by restoring fiscal discipline over the long run that we can produce sustained growth and shared prosperity. And that is precisely the purpose of the budget I'm submitting to Congress today.
Another announcement.
Starting today, the recently unemployed will benefit from a COBRA subsidy that will make health care affordable. At a time when health care is too often too expensive for the unemployed, this critical step will help 7 million Americans who've lost their jobs keep their health care.
667,000 new claims filed just last week. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Can General Motors survive? That's a little more in doubt today after GM announced it lost $31 billion last year on top of the $39 billion it lost in 2007. The carmaker is asking for a $30 billion government handout. Now, these numbers could make some folks in Washington wonder if they're throwing good money after bad. Right now, you can buy GM stock for around $2.35 a share if you want it. Today's numbers, new unemployment claims jumped to 667,000 last week, and orders for expensive durable goods dropped by more than 5% in January. That's six straight months of decline. If there was such a thing as a million-dollar bill, you would need 175,000 of them to cover the size of the deficit that is expected from the budget proposed by President Obama. Much of that money expected to go to an even bigger bank bailout, plus new spending on health care, energy, and education. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Tom Sullivan.
You know, every time I stay with Econo Lodge or Rodeway Inn hotels, I feel like I'm doing right by my wallet. See, after just two separate stays at any Choice Hotel, I earn a free night at up to 1,500 hotels through the Choice Privileges Rewards Program. Yep, all it takes is two stays to stretch my travel dollar with a free night. So thank you, Econo Lodge and Rodeway Inn, from me and my wallet. Book at 800-4-CHOICE or choicehotels.com.
Freenet requires 6,000 or 8,000 points. Requires two stays booked at choicehotels.com or 800-4-CHOICE. Valid 25 through 4309. Details at choicehotels.com.
Family, isn't that what it's all about? Being together, having fun, laughing, enjoying? Where can you go in Westchester with your entire family and encompass all those things? Well, there's one place, and if you haven't already guessed, it's New Rock City in New Rochelle. Everything is made to order for you and your family to enjoy. Whether it's 18 movie theaters or a 17-lane bowling alley, miniature golf, pool and billiards, video arcades, family restaurants, kids' parties to delight all ages, New Rock City has it all for you and yours. Family fun is back in style again, and New Rock City is simply the best thing to happen for families in Westchester County. They've made it their business to make your comfort level exactly that. Comfortable by being together and having a fun time. New Rock City, a place you'll want to go back to time and time again, right in the heart of New Rochelle. Just take I-95 to exit 16 or take the Hutchinson River Parkway. New Rock City, where family fun is waiting for you.
Here's the updated weather forecast in Westchester County. And Saturday looks like some clouds this morning. That becoming partly sunny. Our temperatures for today are rains in the upper 40s, close to 50, and a southwest breeze. For tonight, mostly cloudy. Overnight lows mid-30s, above freezing. And Friday looks overcast, and there's going to be some occasional rain and showers. High temperatures for the day will range in the mid-50s. Showers end at night. Saturday back to mostly sunny weather in mid-40s, and on Sunday a chance of some rain and snow in the mid-30s on Sunday. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for Whitney Media, WVOX, WVIP.
1460 WVOX.
Okay, we are back. I don't know exactly at what point we were cut off. I don't want to go through all of that. The important thing is you are listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle. If you are in some other place you are listening outside of our broadcast area, you are listening live on www.wvox.com. You can get this program in a few days when it's uploaded on my website, www.environmentallysound.org. We are taking calls this hour for either Gene McClear or Jim Connell. If you'd like to know anything about the VA system or anything about our local activities, please feel free to give us a call. This is Environmentally Sound. I am the host, Bob Lebensold, and back to our guests. Now, we were talking about the quality of care that you can expect at the VA. Now, I have used the VA exclusively for, I don't know, a lot of years, and when I hear how much people pay hundreds a month for private health care, I'm just very grateful that I have the system, and I find it to be excellent. My personal doctor, Dr. Carol Allen, whom you know, right, Jim?
Sure.
She takes great care of me. I have no problem putting my life and my well-being in her hands. She's completely more than competent. She combines the best. I guess being a woman is helpful. She combines the best of the softer side of medicine, what nurses more frequently do than doctors. But she's also just as good a doctor as anybody else, too. And I presume she's not the only one. In fact, once she was out, Dr. Lawrence, what's his last
Weil?
Name? Yes, mm-hmm. DeWeil.
DeWeil.
I needed a substitute, and I found he was great, too. So even though there are, of course, some doctors who don't speak the language as well, if you can't relate to a doctor, you don't know really what they're trying to communicate. It's gruffer, and part of healthcare, of course, is that soft bedside manner, nursing kind of thing. That's important to make you feel confident that mm-hmm. you're going to do well. Mm-hmm. So that's my observation on the quality. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you say compared to the private healthcare systems in this country? Just in terms, not the economical aspects, but just in terms of the actual medical care that you get in terms of equipment, the right doctors, training, and all that. Give us something about that.
Well, you know, it's a hard story to tell, and 30 minutes or an hour. It's again back to some of what we were talking about earlier. It's been a transformational process, but you know, a couple of things factor into this transformation. One, I mentioned before, the healthcare eligibility reform brought a lot of new faces into VA. A lot of people who had been getting their healthcare elsewhere looked around and made comparisons and voiced those observations. The other thing that happened in the same period of time, the Healthcare Eligibility Reform Act opened the doors to all veterans. It also changed the mechanism for funding VA hospitals, which in the past, a VA hospital used to be funded like most government agencies. You got pretty much what you spent last year plus a little more for inflation. When they changed the funding mechanism for VA, they did it to address a couple of issues, but one of which was a great migration of veterans from the Northeast, South, and West. During this time, VA found it difficult to keep up, with the quick moves in veterans' habits. And so the funding mechanism changed to what's called a VERA model. And VERA stands for Veterans Equitable Redistribution Allocation. And I'll just stick with VERA. the VERA model, basically, it sort of followed a private sector model. Hospital administrators were reimbursed based on the numbers of patients they were treating and the procedures that they performed. So the money followed the veterans. So getting back to what I said earlier, if somebody who had not been using, and it also allowed VA to bill third-party insurance companies, which was a great relief to a lot of veterans who had third-party insurance, and there is a copay if they're not service-connected. We'll get into that later. Well,
I pay copay. I have a copay, but it's so minimal.
It's fairly minimal.
And I pay the maximum copay.
Yeah.
And I'd be crazy to complain.
And a lot of times you'll find that your third-party insurance will cover it entirely, and there'll be no out-of-pocket expense.
I do have a question. It's related. A veteran who is signed up with the VA system has an emergency situation. This is in the list. Has an emergency situation, needs care elsewhere. Does the VA pick up that tab?
It depends. They may. It's a subjective decision, and in fact, your doctor, Dr. Allen, may be directly involved in a decision along those lines. But the thing of it is, there's no question if it was for a service-connected disability or issue. It would be paid
just
for.
Let's say I had a car accident somewhere, and they had it, and the ambulance came, and that's a private expense, and they took me to a local place to patch me up to where I could get to the VA. Who would pay for that? Also, will just a regular ambulance take me to the VA if if it's an option, if it's in the area, or do they have to go to a certain hospital?
They'll make a judgment on sort of the triage of the situation. But if you can be transported to a VA hospital and there's one in the area and you ask, they will accommodate that request.
So what will the VA pick up? Or am I just responsible if this happens and I have to get care elsewhere?
I think you should count. The way you should look at it is you're going to take care of your health care first and your bills later, which is what we all do. But there's no cut and dry answer to that. And for instance, if we're traveling abroad and we get hurt, VA may pick up the tab for our health care if we have to get it overseas. And there's an office in Colorado whose sole responsibility is to look at those claims from expatriates and people who live outside the United States or travel outside the United States. But back to the issue of the quality of care, if you don't mind.
No.
Back in the 60s, the VA embarked on a system of affiliations with teaching hospitals. Our hospital is affiliated with some of the best hospitals in the area. We have most of our attendings are also attendings
Mount Sinai.
At Mount Sinai, the Hospital for Special Surgery.
Yeah, yeah.
Stony Brook, all the best hospitals in the area. And you can get the best medicine that's available to every New Yorker in your local VA hospital. The equipment is not second par either. The 64 CT scan, 64 slice CT scan, tremendous amounts of healthcare infrastructure dollars are spent on the newest and latest equipment that these doctors who are used to using at Mount Sinai and the Hospital for Special Surgery in Columbia demand to treat our veteran patients. They wouldn't be working with us if that kind of service wasn't available.
Gene, do you have anything to say about? You're the most venerated veteran in the room at the moment. You've been around for such a long time. Not that you're old or anything, but you're older.
I'm not young, that's for sure. I was always of the impression that the most hospitals, I can't say all, most hospitals have X amount of rooms set aside just for veterans. And I guess if you're a person that's going to the VA and you become ill, and you wind up in a, let's say, Sound Shore, they definitely put you in a room, and I'm pretty sure that the VA pays for it.
And you personally, you were a New York City policeman, did you say?
No, New Rochelle.
New Rochelle police officer, so you get your benefits from them as well.
Right.
Which is helpful. What I would like to talk about when we come back is the facility in Montrose. I've heard that they're going to close it, and in fact, there are various plans, one of which I think is to sell it all off to private developers or give it all away. I don't think we have time for that question right now.
Can I just say not true?
It's not true.
Well, let's get to that later. How rumors are.
I know how rumors are, but I actually read this rumor, I think, in the Times or somewhere. Well, so I don't know how the rumor got up there, but it does.
Place for rumors to start.
It does. This is also a big question. If a veteran has other health care options, let's say they have a job and they have benefits, or they're a retired police officer or something, why would they use the VA? Is it exactly the same? Is it just whichever one was closer to their house?
Sure. You just named me. I mean, 75% of the veterans who use our facility, and we have a lot. We have 55,000 enrolled veterans, 25,000 of whom use us actively. We have about 300,000 outpatient visits annually.
Cool. Okay, we're going to take another short break. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, and we will be right back.
What a day for a daydream.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. President Obama sending Congress a budget which tops $3 trillion.
We need to be honest with ourselves about what costs are being racked up, because that's how we'll come to grips with the hard choices that lie ahead.
The president also announcing an extension of COBRA insurance that'll help a lot of the newly unemployed. This is continuing jobless claims tops 5 million.
Also in the spending plan, $130 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now that's a change from the past in which war funding was kept outside the regular budget.
Fox Radio's Rich Johnson in Washington. More dismal news for the housing market. New home sales, which tumbled to a record low pace in January, falling 10.2%, the worst showing since record-keeping began. And a survey suggests people are cutting back on health care in the grim economy. The Kaiser Family Foundation poll finding that one in four Americans say they or someone they live with has postponed needed health care. Fox News, we report, you decide.
This is John Fitzgerald from Cornell's True Value Hardware. For years, you've heard me talk about our family-owned hardware store in East Chester and how we love helping our neighbors with all their home improvement needs.
Environmentally Sound. We are back. You are listening to Environmentally Sound on WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, or you're listening on www.wvox.com. That would be if you're in Tulum, Mexico, Caracas, Venezuela, Lincoln, Illinois, or Nebraska, or Portland, Oregon, or Maine. You have logged on to www.wvox.com. Before we go on with our discussion, I would like to tell you about the Learning Shop, Environmentally Sound's sponsor, Harrison, New York. This is a full-service tutoring company. They provide homebound services for upwards of 20 Westchester County school districts, including Bronxville, Rye, Edgemont, New Rochelle, Chappaqua, et cetera, et cetera. Also provide private tutoring in all academic areas and for any number of standardized tests, GEDs, SATs, whatever it is you need. Now, I talk about them often, and I tell you how nice it is to go there. It's so hospitable. And I tend to talk about the accoutrements more than the instruction, because that's what I get. I don't get instructed there. But when I go there, it's just such a delightful place to be. And of course, let's just make sure you understand that the tutoring is a number one tutoring. For anybody who needs it, school kids, people who are taking tests, whatever it is you need, they have a resource room program as well. They've been running for I don't know how many years now. The program runs 5 days a week, 3:30 to 5:30. They have a wonderful music program in the summer where the kids who are a part of that, you don't have to be kids, but they tend to be, write a song, produce the song, record the song, and by the end of that course, which is fairly brief, they have a CD of their own creation, and it's just the Learning Shop in Harrison, New York. You can get them at 914-835-1070. They're just really a good company to be associated with, and if you need their services, I recommend them to you. Okay, back in the studio with Jim Connell, Gene McClear, and Joan Austin. During the, let's talk about the Montrose.
Oh, okay.
The Montrose. And before we go, even one more second, 914-636-0110 if you have a question about anything having to do with Veterans Affairs. Okay, now the Montrose facility, Jim, this is a part of the system. It's not a full-service hospital, or is it?
Montrose is a, it has a number of functions. It's changed a great deal over the almost 100 years, I think it's been in existence, but right now it is an inpatient facility treating long-term care patients. It's got ambulatory care wing. It's got an associated state nursing home, state veterans nursing home on the.
How does it compare in size with the facility in Kingsbridge Road?
It's much older. It's, you know, a VA has a number.
Size-wise,
it's huge. It's
bigger than
through.
The one here?
It's much bigger in terms of its footprint.
Wow.
It's not as tall. And it's, you know, it was built pre-World War II, I think. If not, it was right around, you know, World War II.
Yeah.
It's FDR. It's named after FDR. And, you know, it was one of the campus-style settings of VA hospitals that was pretty popular during that era. Okay. Ours is a modern facility now, built in 85.
Let me just take a little side trip here. Talk about it. It's called the FDR, you say. Mm-hmm. The one in Kingsbridge Road was recently renamed the James J. Peters VA Medical Center. Who is this guy?
James Peters was an Army officer who was wounded during his service in the Army. Had a suffered a spinal cord injury.
Which war was this?
This was Vietnam, during the Vietnam era.
Okay.
He suffered a spinal cord injury and subsequently became a paraplegic. Blah, 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 easy for me to say. but he went on to and he was treated at the earlier Bronx VA Medical Center. Mm-hmm. He was treated there, and subsequent to his recovery, became involved in the Eastern Paralyzed Veterans Association. Oh. And he was renowned for building that organization from a very small organization to the very large organization that later became the United Spinal Association. But
there's still an Eastern Paralyzed Veterans Association.
There's still a Paralyzed Veterans Association, of which the Eastern Paralyzed Veterans Association was a, I wouldn't even say an affiliate. They were more like partners.
Okay.
Actually, the PVA is Paralyzed Veterans of America, and the EPVA is Eastern Paralyzed Veterans Association. But
I'm not sure which one I contribute to, but they're one of my...
Probably it used to be the EPVA, and now the PVA owns all those mailing lists, so it may be PVA.
So James Peters did a lot to promote...
James Peters did a huge amount. I mean, he really is... He was the moving force behind building the new hospital, quite frankly.
Oh.
In the early 80s, and he died, unfortunately, in 2002, and then in 2003, Senator Clinton and Senator Schumer co-sponsored legislation in the Senate to rename.
I happened to be there the day that the day Hillary Clinton visited the hospital.
Oh, were you?
I got this close to her.
Oh, wow! Yeah, that was like a rock star visit, wasn't
it?
Well,
she was surrounded by an entourage. I couldn't get any closer, and they whisked her through the halls.
I remember that day very well.
There she was.
I coordinated that. Actually, that was
did
nurse.
You get to meet her?
Oh yeah.
Oh, cool.
She's a lovely
nice lady.
Lovely lady. And you know, the nurse, that was during Nurses Week, and they were very enthusiastic about her.
All right, we have a caller. Let's take it. Caller, who are you?
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Good. I'd just like to ask a question. I think when it comes to the VA, I think it depends on where you live, what state. Because the reason I say that, which surprised me, you know, the big to-do they had about Walter Reed with the... Iraqi veterans coming back. Now, my brother relocated from New York to South Carolina, and he gets great care down there. That's why I was just saying, I guess it all depends on where you are.
Well, as we've been saying, you also get great care up here. I'm not sure what distinction you're trying to make.
No, the distinction I'm trying to make is well, okay, where I'm at right now, they closed a VA hospital here in Queens, St. Albans Naval Hospital. That's why I'm saying if they're
Jim Cottle is shaking his head. What do you have to say about that, Jim?
Well, that would be a shock to the 700-800 patients that are being treated there, I think. But it's actually still viable. The Naval Hospital, you're right about, there's not a Naval Hospital on that property anymore. So that did close, I think, many, many years ago. And in fact, that's about the time the VA acquired that facility. But there's still an active VA facility.
It's still active. It has long-term care.
You know, you mentioned Walter Reed, and I just take this opportunity to comment on that, because you weren't making this distinction, but interestingly, a lot of people assumed that the problems at Walter Reed were a VA problem. To the extent that we all end up serving the same cohort of patients, we do share the problems. But Walter Reed is a Department of Defense facility and not one of the 154 hospitals within the VA community of hospitals. So we took a, in fact, you know, this is not an issue, you know, just, you know, for our veterans, but I had a producer for a major nightly TV show in our hospital, and just looking around to set up a shoot, and his reason for being there was because of the great problems with our VA hospitals as identified in the Walter Reed story.
And, I said, and it's a good thing you mentioned that.
It's not Walter Reed.
Because at the time, everybody was saying how the VA was treating the veterans.
Yeah.
They never made the distinction.
Right, they didn't make the distinction. They drew parallels, as a matter of fact, and the thing of it is, and I ask reporters this when I talk to them, where is it you're going with this? What do you want to try to accomplish? Because frankly, like any medical system, I was telling Bob earlier, we have 300,000 outpatient visits a year. It's about 1,000 sick people a day coming into our facility every single day, working day of the year. It shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that some leave with problems, and mm-hmm. we don't pretend to be perfect, and I think that's where a lot of folks get into trouble.
Well, they get it. And just one last thing. Mm-hmm. When I got out of the service in 1952, and I guess about 4 or 5 years later, I went to the VA for something, and the doctor said, well, look, I'll tell you what, you come here for 3 weeks and we run all kinds of tests on you. That's how it was then.
Sure. And those, you know, and first of all, thank you for your service. I should have mentioned that earlier, but that's the atmosphere you'll find in VA by and large. It doesn't mean that you won't run into some disagreeable sort somewhere down the line. It happens everywhere you go, whether it's
right.
a grocery store, or your local healthcare provider in the private sector. The thing you do next is the important step, we've made a great effort to try to improve services in VA. Again, we're not perfect, but we keep moving forward. And I think if the focus can be on the veteran and their service to our country, and our obligation as healthcare providers, I think we're going to meet somewhere in the middle.
Because I thought they had the best doctors when I went. That's why I went there.
I think they're certainly as good as any doctors you'll find anywhere. Thank you very much, caller. We only have a couple of minutes left.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. Jim, let me just get back to that Montrose question. We only have a couple of minutes, but mm-hmm. I do want that to be answered.
Sure.
We've heard rumors that they're closing it or rumors that they're selling off all the land. I think it's on quite a bit of land. And there are other plans, which Ron Tocci had floated, that they want to put up some low-cost housing, I believe,
yeah.
for veterans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you know about all this in 2 minutes?
Yeah. The CARES program, which initiated this whole look at VA's property and trying to align it for services in the next 20 years, Capital Asset Realignment for Enhanced Services is what CARES stands for, looked at all of VA's properties. The Hudson Valley campus at Montrose has a great deal of property in an old-style footprint that VA does not use anymore. We're modernizing our facilities and trying to keep up with the changes in medicine that even the
so
private sector.
What is
so it's not closing.
It's not closing.
Important soundbite to
what
get
about
out there.
All, well, that's the point.
Yeah.
What about the land? Is that going to use for veterans?
Some of the land is here's what's planned for that site: a brand new, very extensive ambulatory care center, where outpatient surgeries can be performed and outpatient clinics will be servicing veterans. There will be an inpatient service there for the residential treatment program. But a lot of the inpatient services that are there now will go to Castle Point.
What about the housing?
The housing, we have proposals from the community for an enhanced use lease program for a lot of the acreage. There's hundreds and hundreds of acres there.
But will that be used by private or by the VA?
That will be used for the benefit of veterans.
Great. Okay.
I've got
to cut you off there. Yeah. I'd like to thank Jim Connell and Gene McLear for coming to our studio today. We say a lot about our veterans, especially those who go to combat and risk their lives to defend our way of life. We honor those who have fallen and have the obligation to support them when they return home. But our VA goes beyond that. Even non-combat vets are provided with benefits just for having served. The VA has come a long way in public perception, now seen as one of the most efficient healthcare delivery systems in the country and a model for other HMOs. Those of you who do not realize the fine services provided by the agency should spread the word. It is one of the best uses of taxpayer dollars I can think of. Our thought for the week: there is only one time when it is essential to waken. That time is now. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station. Flagship of Whitney Radio. Next up, Howard Sterman, publisher, public citizen, and pub patron, I imagine. Always stimulating, intelligent discussion, except when Ken calls in. Freedom of speech. Thank you very much for listening, and remember to be kind.
Fox News Radio, I'm Ken Duffy.
For too long, our budget has not told the whole truth about how precious tax dollars are spent.
President Obama promising to show us everything that's part of his budget proposal. The president spoke of his ideas for the fiscal future. Live in Washington, Fox Radio's Chris Barnes.
He says he'll show where it's going, but not everyone's going to like it, Ken. The $3 trillion plan holds billions for health care from tax hikes on the wealthy and revenues from carbon emission credits. Now, despite a $1.75 trillion projected deficit this fiscal year, the president says the nation must show fiscal responsibility.
And that is precisely the purpose of the budget I'm submitting to Congress today.
But Minnesota's Republican Governor Tim Pawlenty says given its